Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Relative Pitch. Happy Wednesday, or happy any day that you are kind of, you know, we drop on Wednesdays, but who knows whenever this might reach you. Just know that we are hoping that your week, your day, your hour that you're with us is positive and amazing. First of all, I would have to say, I'm wearing my little Go Dawgs little hat today. So truly, Go Dawgs, Michael.
Did you watch the game?
I never watched the game unless I'm there. And I still don't watch the game.
That's true. That's true.
Like, they won though, right?
They did. They beat
They whooped that ass.
Wow.
Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
But Lauren, your school is also Go Dawgs, which I find hilarious.
It's not. It's not.
Go Dawgs and Go Huskies. Absolutely.
It should not be Go Dawgs. I will die on this hill. It's a Husky. And also, they ain't even that good at football. So, no.
This is speaking from someone with a lot of experience in football.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I just find it... People, when I say, like, yeah, I went to a school that was, like, heavenly in football, so they automatically start asking me about football. I'm like, sweetheart, I was there for the plot, actually. Like, I was there for the outfits, for the things that came with it. I was basically courtside, field side, you know, with the little dog. What's his name? Boom. You know,
Boom.
Got the picture and everything. Like, I was there for the plot. Now, don't ask me anything that happened between each of those quarters, because I don't know. I don't know them young men. If any of them were up past me.
I literally hate Anthony. I truly despise you sometimes.
Don't know them. I really don't know them.
And it's not even that. It's your use of, I don't know them young men.
I don't know them. People will be like, oh my gosh, Carson Beck, this person, that person. I'm like, who is that? But anyways, you know, go teams. We've talked about having your passions, and football is a passion of Michael's. I like the atmosphere, and we've all talked about finding those moments where you can, like, turn your brain off and just exist. And honestly, football, when I'm there, I can never watch it on TV. But when I'm there, it is one of those moments where I like the atmosphere of what's happening. Just like, you know, people like going to see different other sporting events or the tailgating, you know, put on something cute, move on. That's it. Yeah. So how have y'all's week been? Michael, you traveled all the way to Seattle.
I did. I was in the past, I think, 3 or 4 days, I've flown 10 hours. I am dead on the inside. But it was a fabulous time. I got to see someone in the screen who shall not be named.
Yes.
3 out of 5 Airbnb rating, but, you know, we made it work. We made it work.
You wish you could afford my rent.
Ooh.
So done with you.
Get out. No, it's just been, oh my gosh, like October. I think three episodes ago, we talked about Bantober, but in general, how October is just such a culminating, like, mass of stuff that happens before the holidays, and how we wanted to, like, we were telling people, pace yourself, take breaks, etc. And yeah, it's been a month. It's what is today? I mean, I guess on Wednesday it'll be what, the 23rd?
It's already the 20s. Oh my god!
Like the 20, already the 20s. It's already the 20s. I remember starting October, and it feels like she kind of, like, popped her head in and was like, hey, I'm just gonna, like, be here for a sec. And, like, she's running. And the only sprinting. The only positive is that as soon as you hit November, it's basically Thanksgiving. And basically Thanksgiving means it's basically Christmas, you know?
But can we delay November just a little bit?
Why?
Are we delaying November?
Yeah.
I need to delay November, okay, for a personal reason.
That means Michael is procrastinating something major. So if you hire
I'm not procrastinating.
fire.
First of all, I have been practicing, but
No.
baby, I need it to be delayed, okay?
He November is coming.
hasn't touched that.
Honestly, this is, it's crazy.
You need to stop.
Ooh. It's crazy to think, because like the week that's coming out is my birthday week.
Oh my God, you're turning like 35.
You're weird. Don't do too much.
Oh, you're weird.
Don't do too much. You're doing too much. Because last time I checked, you are the one with the AARP.
First of all,
Benefit.
I know AARP already called you and you already a member. Then you already drawn your Social Security. Okay, but don't do that.
Michael, when you
Michael's in a feisty mood because he's sleepy and because he
I'm
doesn't know
sleepy.
how to say no. Because he
I'm
doesn't know how to say
tired.
But see, what Michael needs to realize is that there, between the two of us, when we get out of bed, only one person elbows, knees, and ankles crack. Not
no. First of all, she ain't
mine.
got no cankles over here. She ain't
No,
got no cankles over here.
no,
And
no.
yes,
Do I need to pull up
we.
the picture? Do I need to pull
That was the shoe, and that
the
was years ago. Okay. You know what? First of all, and then
then
second of all, yes, my elbows and knees and toes be cracking because I be working and these children be making me so tired.
literally, what was it, 3, 4 weeks ago? Michael texted us and was like, I'm in the urgent care because I think I got
First
gout.
of all,
AARP.
First of all, that was not 2, 3 weeks ago. Your time perception. I know as you get older, your time perception ain't good. That was at least a month, if not 2 months ago.
That's crazy. It was not 2 months ago. That's insane.
It was early September, almost 2 months ago.
I don't even know about that, but
It
okay.
was. I got a receipt over there.
I'm
Had to
sure.
go buy my gout medicine.
Exactly. So
And
when
first of all, it never came back. Knock on wood, so it ain't gout. I just jammed it really, really bad. And it
it,
hurt. And it
there's a person
hurt.
that says they're the youngest.
First of all, I never said I was the youngest. I just said you old.
Well,
You
eldest. Thank you.
know. Well, one of the highlights to make Michael's life easier so he doesn't die later
Thank you.
on.
Thank you.
Of his visit here was actually we got to see a lovely concert at the Seattle Symphony, featuring Tina Ting Helseth, the trumpet star, one of Michael's faves.
Okay.
What I will have to say, it's more rare than not, yes, more rare than not, to see a woodwind or brass soloist with a symphony. It's mainly usually violin, cello, piano, and it gets boring. After a while, no matter how what cute the dress of the soloist is, or like if they play it well, of course they're playing it well, it just gets boring. It's the same thing. So
Yeah.
to see like a trumpet, and also of course it's being Tina, like her as a woman within the brass world, like I was like, oh, this is gonna be great, but I was like, I'm expecting a lot of people not to show up because it's not violin or piano. It was packed, both.
Was.
Packed both nights. So now my question is, are we going to do something about that? Is that going to be a continuous situation? Because I want to see tuba, I want to see bassoon, like I want to see clarinet. Well, actually, maybe depends.
Okay, first of all, you going a little too far. Tuba was too far, clarinet was too far. Bassoon, we could do that.
Whoa.
Trombone, that would be cute.
Where
Horn.
did the tuba hate come from?
Right.
I'm not hating on tuba, but like it just
That's what you sound like when you play tuba.
No, that's what a tuba sounds like. It sounds like a broken subwoofer sometimes. Also, no shade, no tea. If an orchestra doesn't play delicate enough to cover up a plays too not delicate enough and it covers up a trumpet, what you think will happen to a tuba? And all their concertos are new, and orchestras don't play new music well.
Well, and that's the issue. Then that, first of all, it needs to be an educational thing for everybody. Just because you're professional doesn't mean you stop learning.
Well, some workers just have stopped learning.
And that is our issue right there.
Well,
Because,
it's like complacency.
but then the thing is, those same people that are sitting in those orchestras have, more often than not, have students that they are teaching privately, and they're always telling their students, oh, you should never stop learning. You're always going to learn. You're always going to learn. And then they turn around because playing in orchestra is their 9 to 5. They're like, I can stop learning. I'm going to play the same Mozart, Beethoven, Mozart, not Mozart twice.
Ooh, and that's what it feels like.
And that's what it feels like. Because I asked Michael what was also on the program,
Bookended.
and he said 2 Mozart symphonies. And I was like, why two? Why
Well,
two?
showing the juxtaposition between no trumpets in the 40 and trumpets in the 41st.
I guess you could also play something cute.
Well, first of all, I just completely made that up. I just know I didn't see a trumpet on the first piece, so I kind of zoned out and did the Michael thing where I just look around and be like, because Lauren didn't allow me to fall asleep.
Yes, well, some of us have decorum. Thank you.
I got no decorum. If you play a Mozart, no decorum.
And no shade to Mozart. And shout out to Mozart. Everybody clap for Mozart because
Ooh,
there was a
whoa,
whole piece.
whoa, 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 not shout out to Mozart.
First of all, Mozart just dropped a new track before Rihanna, before Solange, before all these girls.
And what was it?
I don't know. Somebody, he dropped
Girl.
something. Did y'all not see that?
Girl. I did see that in the news. I
Exactly.
did. He probably P. Diddy related.
But like, isn't it crazy? Actually, like, I just we're gonna end during that. But I'm currently in a music and like attribution and like course that's all about like that we talk about copyright law, forgeries, and all this. And we currently just
Oh.
started studying the Haydn forgeries that happened. And basically, there was a bunch of articles. One of my favorite ones was a critique, I think, in the New York Times by someone being like, because it ended up being where all the Haydn society and everyone was like, these are real Haydns. We have Haydns. Yeah, let's go, let's go. And then it was like, actually, they're not Haydns. But what was real was everyone's excitement for the Haydns, and they completely glossed over all the reasons why it wasn't Haydn, because they, of course, have their ways of looking at the paper, the ink, how they wrote things to like date to where actually it was written and placed and everything, and also, analyzing the musical like structure, form analysis, all that stuff. So, but the critique was basically like, but if someone was able to trick a bunch of Haydn society people like into believing this was Haydn, what's so special about Haydn? And I was like, girl.
Well, because he was hiding.
I'm sure somebody's going to find that joke funny.
And don't, because it's not even his. It's so
But
old.
but
First of
that's
all,
okay.
okay, you know what?
Oh.
We're gonna have one, oh, almost cuss. We're gonna have 1 hour in the next 2 weeks where y'all don't do this, okay? My mental state is not here for this, okay?
No, what I also want to do is shout out to our audience because, first of all, the amount of times I hear when we're out in public, oh my God, y'all be doing Michael so wrong. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, Michael does this
Michael
himself.
literally, before we hit record, is sitting up here laid up in the bed.
I'm tired. And I don't feel well. Like,
And
I
then
feel kind of like sick.
he'll start throwing jabs. So do you know what? That's not my problem. The next thing I have to say, the mic is on. I just not speak.
You know what? I next time next podcast, I will type out all my answers then.
You can't type. You can't spell,
I
girl.
really can't. I really can't.
In the form of a sentence, still be whooping yo. You know what? But we love you. Oh. Oh. Here comes the chicken
But
scratch,
no.
child.
No, but seriously, like going back to like programming orchestras and everything. Let's be real. There's so many orchestras who are operating in such a far deep crimson red right now. And it makes me so confused as to why we haven't tried updating the kinds of music we're playing, the people we're collaborating with. Some are, right? The LA Phil is doing some cute stuff. Anthony was just filling us in. Anthony, what's going on at LA Phil?
First of all, I have never been this excited about orchestra. Like, that's just not, that has never been my thing. But recently, a person who I love to death and who it's like my spirit animal, if I had to choose one, which is Solange Knowles. And for some of you uncultured people, that is Beyonce's sister, a musical icon in her own right. So she created a collective called the Saint Huron Collective back in 2013, and she created that for musicians like her to kind of be together to share their art, which is very similar to some people we're going to have later on in our season, New Black Vanguard, which is a group of composers who are, sharing each other's art and uplifting each other. So Solange had the same thing back in 2013. And in the interview with LA Times, she talks about how the collective have kind of grew as time has progressed. So now it's more about safekeeping and archiving blackness, from music to art to dance to all of those mediums, without it being watered down, and a place where Black people can see Black things without maybe going to a white institution, like an art exhibit. That, we all know this. Sometimes when Black artists have their things, up for show, it'll be at this predominantly white institution, this white museum, and it's for 1 week and 1 week only. So, and we often show up. Like, I will never forget the ASO, it was a couple of years ago, they did a show where they invited all the D9 organizations. Maybe everybody showed up and showed out, but that was
Was.
one concert. Even here in Houston, they have it was the Latin Music Night. When I told you that hall was full, it was sold out.
Right.
But unfortunately, for people of minority status, we can only look for one night, maybe 1 week, of where our culture is represented within these orchestras, within these art exhibits, within these shows. That's it. And so Solange took that, and so she's starting to curate these events. And the first thing that she did was she collaborated with the New York City Ballet, and she composed the score for a 60-minute ballet. And oh my gosh, I listened to some of it and I was like, wow, like that's really cool, because it's so fun to me when a pop star, a person that is usually known for their popular music, is creating things what we would call in the more classical idiom. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes. So, and then this year, literally this past weekend, Saint Heron and Solange collaborated with the LA Philharmonic, which is one of the top orchestras in the country, for a 3-night event called the El Dorado Ballroom, which each night represented a specific kind of sector of blackness. The first night was called On Dissonance, celebrating classical music by black female artists, in which the first piece that they performed was a piece called Symphonia by Patrice Rushen, which, if you don't know Patrice Rushen, I would go Google who that is and listen to the song Forget Me Not, which, A, if you're on TikTok, you would know the song. If you are a millennial, you would also know the song, because Forget Me Nots is the theme song, or it was interpolated of the theme song of Men in Black. So if you like those two things, you would know the song. The song originally came out in the 70s. And Patrice Rushen was known for more of her dance disco things in that time, but she's also this like very diverse jazz pianist. And in the 90s, she was like another medium I would love to kind of create for is the orchestra. And Symphonia was one of her first orchestral works. And I listened to it and I was like, oh my gosh, like the way she kind of put things together, the music sonically was just amazing. So that was the opening piece for that night. And then a composer that Solange, she didn't rediscover, but we've talked about Florence Price on here and how her rediscovery of pieces really came after COVID, after 2019, after the 2020 social unrest, where all these musicians are like, oh my gosh, we need to play Black music. So that's when you really start to hear William Grant Steele's music. You started to hear Florence Price's music and it, many others from that era. Julia Perry's music was also rediscovered, but not really on the same level. And there were three pieces on the program, and OMG, so good. And Julia Perry, she studied, of course, with, as many people did in the mid 20th century, Nadia Boulanger, who we've talked about,
Nadia.
Nadia. She, you know, did some studies at Tanglewood, Juilliard, like all these places. And unfortunately, she died in the 70s. And so her name was lost in the shuffle of day to day. I mean, of course, and racism, that's something that we cannot overlook as being a Black female composer and conductor. We know how time has done to those people. And so that was featured on the program. And then there was another piece that Solange created for two tubas. And she talks about, you know, she wanted to do this piece because she grew up going to HBCU bands and the football games and the tuba section from Texas Southern, which is HBCU, how she used to love hearing the tubas play. So she created two pieces and had two Black tuba players on the stage of LA Philharmonic playing that style. Like, oh my, and they're both from New Orleans. I looked them up. Again, I went on a whole deep dive. Like,
It's really cute though because they're listed as sousaphone on the LA Phil's like program.
I was about to ask, did they play it on sousaphone or did they play it on tuba?
they played it on sousaphone, and there was they were pointed next to each other like it was a battle, like how HBCU style would do between the two tuba sections. And it's
That's amazing.
funny, Michael, that you mentioned a tuba concerto earlier in this episode. And here it is, Solange, you know, she was just explaining her process. And I was like, OMG. The reason she's my spirit animal is because she represents really what I have come to see myself as of like growing up, popular music, R&B, hip hop, things like that. That was the music that I loved. That's the music that I listen to every single day, every day I wake up. But having this classical bug, this jazz bug, this thing that you maybe learned in school, it's still part of your identity too, and bridging the gap between those two. That's what was so interesting to me. And mind you, that was just night one. A lot of rediscovery, just night one.
That's what's so amazing to me is like looking through this, and if you, I mean, I'm sure we'll drop the link for LA Phil's like program website for this, but the way they programmed this is beautiful. Like they were able to get in such amazing works and artists within this, with the second night being a focus on experimental jazz, funk, and soul, and the third being like more on, you know, devotional spiritual music towards gospel roots. I think this is amazing because it's kind of touching, putting Black creativity in the realms of, you know, so-called classical music, jazz, that world of funk and soul and gospel kind of on the same playing field of this is all Black art. This is all Black. These are areas where there has been influence by Black creatives throughout the last century, if not longer. And this, I mean, this is kudos to LA Phil, because truly this kind of innovative approach to what is a classical presenter in a way is exactly what's going to be needed for it to stay relevant. And like, it's not only beneficial to your audiences, like it's not just about you getting money and a way to talk to donors about more money, but also people who love Solange, people who in general love these artists who they're seeing, who are coming to your halls and who's going to have maybe their first ever encounter with classical music, and who might, like a child might go and go say, I really want to play the sousaphone now. And that just continues to create this culture of like creation, art, wanting to, and there's no negative to this. Like, I hope we all understand that there's no negative to this. And what Anthony was speaking to earlier about groups will do this kind of thing. They will try to, well, not this. This is in itself very innovative, but they will do the thing of like one night of this, one night of that. And sometimes you have to start with that, right? Because you're unsure, you're not sure how you're going to sell it. It's all about marketing, everything else. But it's how you keep it going. And it doesn't mean to do the exact same thing every single season. You have to change it up. The world is so dynamic. Humans are so
Oh,
dynamic
yeah.
that one day you might be like, I'm so interested in this one thing. And the next day it's like this, and you're supposed to be. So offer that. Offer that.
Correct. I will also say LA has always been that girl in
Always.
terms of like doing things and like just different concepts, different things. I mean, they have Dudamel. And Dudamel likes to do a lot of good stuff and cool things. So I'm wondering, now posing a little question, is that going to leave LA when Dudamel leaves LA? And is that going to transfer to New York?
The thing is, well, one, I hope it does. I hope it does transfer to New York because, and the second part of that, I don't think it will leave LA because how LA is a melting pot of so many cultures. How could you be an representing LA and not embrace Black, not embrace Hispanic, not embrace Asian cultures, not embrace, like, it's LA. And that's why I'm hoping when he, transitions to New York, if he is, because he will be the artistic director and things like that, that he brings those elements to it, because New York is another melting pot of so many cultures that I don't think, and again, I'm not in the true orchestra world, orchestral world, however, but they really haven't done nothing to me that hasn't been like standard practice. Nothing truly break. I mean, I again,
New York, New York.
New York.
I truly think the two that are pushing the boundary the most in terms of like different is Philly and LA. And then Chicago and New York are kind of like holding those, like Chicago, New York, and Cleveland are like holding those old war horses down.
And
Which
that's what I have known as New York, as they're still stuck in those 1960s, 70s recordings of, and mind you, they are nice recordings, with Bill Smith on
They are
trumpet.
nice recordings.
They're great recordings, But the thing is, and I don't know how many times we collectively have said this on this podcast, on this platform, it is now 2024. The people that are listening to music and wanting music, they're not buying tickets to continue to see those shows. So something is going to have to change.
I think that though, thinking about, because I'm glad that we started naming cities though, because think about Chicago, New York, those are dense, packed cities. So like what a lot of places that are maybe not as populated are experiencing is the first waves of this downturn of ticket numbers, subscription numbers, et cetera. It's gonna take a little bit more time for the bigger houses to have like that same level of impact that we're seeing, like what Nashville Symphony going through, I believe, right now, and others. So I think it's easier for New York and Chicago to maintain that reputation of a traditional house because they have enough people there, population density wise, that they can keep perpetuating that system more and more and more and more. Whereas like LA, Hollywood. It's all, you know, all about like in it, like it's lively, it's innovative. It is this melting pot, and there's this freshness about it. It's on the West Coast, so in general, West Coast has this different vibe about it, you know, as Michael would call hippy dippy. But
Hippy dipping.
within that same lens, it's this idea of freshness, innovation that LA feel is just very open to, and they have Walt Disney money backing that. So I think that's a good just like thing to separate those places.
Correct. I will stand slightly corrected. They have launched Afro-modernism, music of the African diaspora, and it's one to New York Phil, New York Phil. And it's three different, like there's a couple of different things. Like the one that's coming up like tomorrow is Africa's fashion diaspora. And it's like solo cello mixed in with like fashion. And so like, that is cool. But then you go to like Mozart.
It's fine. Like the thing is,
Yeah.
people like Mozart. So like keep Mozart as long as you have it mixed in. And like you're right, like New York and I think even Chicago are having more and more projects that are kind of like this. And again, the end goal though is still to have it where it's not just these one-off projects. Because even saying this to LA Phil too, y'all are great. This is a project. Right? Like this is not something that's in like the masterworks, whatever y'all are calling it these days, like series. So
Of
when do we get
subscription
it where
concerts.
Solange is on the subscription concerts and not just as a standalone thing?
Now that they would have to add five performances.
Oh yes.
Who
Well,
would, girl, how many people come out to a Solange masterwork?
but that's the other thing about when you do these pieces is that the audience is coming because of who the name is attached to. And one thing I want to say before I move on about New York is that, and for many of the orchestras, when we say the integration of other pieces of music from different perspectives should be added, we are not saying that the traditional music needs to be taken away out of the entire repertory. That's not what we're saying. But it should be added within it because you can tell a whole story. Mozart can be on the same thing that Julia Perry's on. There can be a story tied to that. And then in your next concert, you can bring something by Arturo Marquez and put that with something of Brahms. You can make the story, and it's showing that it's making up what our culture in America is, of there's many different voices that is heard without tokenizing, without it being a one off or two off or maybe a little side project. No, I remember in 2020, we're going to make sure that everything is on these programs and everything gets treated with the right respect.
Remember, next year's the year we can actually start looking at it. It's 5 years.
And we're already looking at it, and we're already seeing that it was a whole lot of lies for majority of those institutions.
Correct. I also want to put something out there. Don't do the same composers. Like, yes, let's do Marquez one time. Let's do Florence Price. Let's do X name composer. Don't keep doing them. Try deeper and try to explore more. Like every symphony, I'm pretty sure Lauren can correct me on this, like big symphonies, even small ones, has education offices and departments.
Depends on how big they are. Well, sometimes it's just one person, or sometimes it's like five of us, like my like Seattle Symphony.
Beautiful.
Other times it can be tied into like another role, but it is becoming a way more standardized like department or role to have is an education.
But most tier ones will have them.
Oh yeah! Oh my gosh!
Okay,
Absolutely.
so that's what I'm mainly talking about, tier ones. Use your education department to educate yourselves.
And if you want to have a resident education person who's specifically on it, because education departments specifically right now within American orchestras are made in terms of outreach, external, but rarely are we actually asked internally to speak to programmers, to marketers, directors about how to speak to the works that's being programmed. And that's the issue. There's a disconnection. We're supposed to be educating the community, but the people in a building ain't even educated. So what is that? But also, if you want that, pay me more. I'm not doing my all my programming and educating you with the same
Okay.
budget. So I will say
Well,
that.
because you them symphony musician gonna walk off and be like, yeah, hey, what was your favorite piece? I know I just didn't like the weird one, and they'll just walk off.
It's true that, well, they're allowed to have that distance from what is actually going on. There's people who took so much time to think about the programming and the story, and sometimes you have musicians who don't care about that absolutely whatsoever. It's all about culture, and I'm glad this reminded me of something we were just talking about. Is Dudamel leaving LA Phil going to affect what's going on at LA Phil, and will he take it to New York? It is all about the culture of the people who are there. I am currently doing show talks for the opera Jubilee by Tazewell Thompson, who wrote Blue. And all this is a story about the Fisk Jubilee singers. And the thing about it is the Seattle Opera has been so it's been significant the impact they've had on modern operas, specifically modern operas by Black composers. And the exiting general director, she's leaving, the one who was responsible, I believe, for bringing Blue In and A Thousand Splendid Suns when it was back here as well, and now Jubilee. And people are coming up after the pre-show talk going, well, with Christina leaving, is this all gonna stop? And I was like, it won't if you don't. If you keep as patrons demanding that you are, I in like with Aida, with La Traviata, I wanna see Thousand Splendid Suns. I wanna see Jubilee. I wanna see Malcolm X. That is what has to happen for it to continue. So we cannot even just put it on this one person, even though they make a ridiculous amount of money and they're supposed to. But like, if in New York Phil, like, it's not just going to be one person who changes, it has to be a collective amount of people who are pushing it, who are making sure that we're continuing to do it. So I think there's gonna be some impact, of course. Leadership changes always leaves impact. But as long as the community is like, we want this still, and we're demanding this, and our ticket numbers, our attendance numbers, all that will reflect that, we'll see that.
Well, because I think a little bit why we've seen a little bit of change, because I was just looking through more of the thing in New York, was the person who brought in Dudamel now works at New York. And that is one reason he is going to New York. She has secured him that. So I think she's trying to make that change there, like she probably did at LA. And she probably set up that culture to hopefully stay there. So it'll be good if this can hit a couple of tier. Baby, just go ahead and make a round of the tier ones. I know it's a lot of moving for you, but just keep going. I believe in you.
And
And this
I
is Debbie. Are you talking about Deborah Borda?
yes.
It,
Because girl, oh, never mind.
well, I was saying, if the community isn't there, then nobody's getting paid. Zero people is getting paid. It is not one of those, oh, we're still going to do this and nobody's in the chair. It doesn't work that way. So you have to reflect what the people want. And when it's always funny to me when these things happen, like the El Dorado's ballroom with Solange happens, and some of those people that work in the orchestra, they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know these people were here. They've always been here. They knew where LA Philharmonic was. They knew where the room was. But did you go out to see them before
Probably
today?
not.
Answer that question. So don't wait until something like this happened. It's part of the job to go out into the community to settle. What can we do for you? Not, we just want your money so we can pay thousands and thousands of dollars to some people that sit behind a desk.
Right.
Correct.
Shout out to Solange for being just so innovative and thoughtful with her programming and what she's doing
Correct.
with her time as an artist. And shout out to LA Phil for continuing this tradition of innovation. And we hope to keep pushing you to, again, placing this kind of work onto your subscription series so that there's more. It's not just because right now it's still a little separated, right? We're not sure if the people, or it's framed in the sense of the people who want to hear Brahms don't want to hear Solange. That's not true. I want to hear Brahms and I want to hear Solange. Like, what
Facts.
about me? What about the Laurens of the world, right? And there's plenty. It's just so, again, dynamic. That's a fun word. The word of the week is dynamic. things change so much, allow people to pick and choose and go, oh, this week I do want to go to this. And trust that when they're not there, another person comes and goes, oh, I do want to go to this though. You can have it all. You can have it all.
You can have it
And
all.
shout out to the artists, the composers, musics who's discovered every day, who's being performed every day, that was lost in time due to many factors. So shout out to Julia Perry's music being rediscovered, Patrice Rushen, and to the people that were and to the people that are doing the work to find these works, because they are important to be part of our lexicon.
Absolutely.
Correct.
So I hope you enjoyed this conversation on this. All the works that we mentioned, go check them out on your own. It'll be linked
Yes.
below, because it's different from when you listen to just the titles versus you hear those works, those beautiful, beautiful works. So, and reach out to your local orchestras and demand, if you want to hear something and you want to see something, there's emails, there's phone numbers. Find them, contact them, and let them know that you are a person that belongs in their seats. So,
Correct.
until next time, see you later.